everybody. Welcome to episode 16 of the 13 O'Clock Podcast.
16 already.
16 already. Right. I know. Gosh, we've been doing that. Well, we haven't been doing this that long, but, you know.
Yeah.
Already at 16 episodes. Now. Yeah. And we decided to do another serial killer show.
Yeah, because the responses are so good. You sick bastards out there. I mean, we'll get 2,000 hits on original Night Stalker. So you guys like serial killers? We're going to bring you some more serial killers.
We like serial killers.
And this is some of the worst of the bunch. This case has always disturbed me from back when it happened.
Yeah, these two assholes.
Yeah, these are shitbirds.
Woo! Anyway. But before we start on that, I wanted to just give a shout out. This past weekend, December 2nd, 3rd, and 4th, we were at Spooky Empire in Orlando.
Spooky Empire.
And we were invited to be on some of the author panels, and we were there signing books and stuff like that. And it was such a great experience. And we just wanted to, I wanted to especially give a shout out to A.D. Sams, the writer. She was the one that organized all the authors, and she was the one that contacted us to be on the panels and stuff like that. And she did an amazing job, like, setting up all the panels and scheduling everybody. And I also wanted to give a shout out to the other authors that were on the panels with us. And some of these were actually the ones that were slated to be there, but a couple of them weren't there, but most of these people were there. So I'm just going to read their names and then we'll get on to the serial killer stuff. So we're just going to mention A.D. Sams, Christopher Helton, Cynthia Lott, Elise Reyes, Indy McDaniel, John Catapano, Justin Jordan, Catherine Hurst, she was not there, but her husband was, Larry Haydorn, Melissa Gibbo, Nicole Vlachos, Owl Goingback, P.D. Mongelli, R.G. Jajola, Sarah Nay, Scott M. Baker, Scott Marlowe, Tim Anderson, Trent Duncan, and Tyson Hanks. So look all those guys up. Most of them are writers. Some of them do podcasts and various other things. So, you know.
Also like to give a shout out to all the new subs that we got. And
yes,
everybody from
exactly.
The public we met. Hey, welcome to 13 O'Clock. Glad you guys all subbed the other day.
Yeah. Yeah. Fantastic. Fantastic. So, okay. These two douchebags.
Yeah. Oh, man.
We are talking today about Leonard Lake and Charles Eng.
Oh, my God.
I know. These two. Yeah. For some reason, like, you know, serial killers in general are scumbags. Okay. Yeah. And I understand the fascination. I find them fascinating. I don't like to glorify them necessarily. I know some people are kind of into them like they're rock stars and stuff.
These two take the cake.
But yeah, for some reason, these two, even though their body count isn't as high as maybe some other ones, these two just, I don't know, they just piss me off more than
just
most of the other
losers.
Ones. And I'm not sure why that is. But yeah, they're kind of horrible. So, give a little background. Leonard Lake was the older of the two.
Well, first of all, what year
and
was this?
This was, late 70s, early 80s.
Okay.
I think most of their murders happened in the 80s, although they had been arrested for various other things.
Yeah, they had long histories
before they started their little project. But, Leonard Lake was originally from San Francisco. And, he came from a broken home. You know, as a lot of them do. Parents separated when he was six. And then after that, him and his sisters were sent to live with his maternal grandmother. Now, when he was growing up, apparently he got super into porn, and he got into it either as a result of, or, you know, because I'm not sure how, but he started taking nude pictures of his sisters.
Weird.
And apparently his grandmother was all about that shit.
No shit.
Like, she encouraged it. Like, yeah, get that, you know.
Oh, my God.
I know. Weird. Like, old ladies, man. Creepy. So, I mean, apparently he was kind of he was an intelligent guy, as a lot of serial killers are, admittedly. But they also think that he might have molested his sisters or... Mm. Been in consensual sexual relations with his sisters.
Now, this is all shadowy and unconfirmed.
Yeah, right? Or something like that. Also with many serial killers, started with animal cruelty. His thing was he used to dissolve mice in acid.
Damn.
Which is nice.
Yeah.
And awesome. So that also served him well later on in his later serial killer career.
Okay.
He actually enlisted in the Marines. And he did two tours in Vietnam. He was a radar technician. And during this time when he was in the military, he was actually in for a while, but then he had to go through, you know, psychological, because I guess they thought maybe there was something wrong with him.
Sure, there was something wrong with him, so they sent him for a psych eval.
So they sent him for a psych eval, and turned out he had schizoid personality disorder. They diagnosed that. And he suffered a breakdown, and he got sent home on a medical discharge in 1971. And then he did go to psychotherapy after that. Clearly, it did not help him. Mm-hmm. And
can't help bad brains.
Yeah. And, you know, and like I said, and we've talked about this a lot before, serial killers, you know, there's a big debate over born or made. I think it's a combination of two things, because I think a lot of people are born, you know, maybe kind of messed up. Mm-hmm. But if they have like a normal, loving upbringing, then they'll probably turn out fine.
Okay, yeah.
But if you combine...
It's like a perfect storm of
this kind of genetic, you know, predisposition toward that kind of thing. And then you grow up in this kind of fucked up home where your grandmother's saying, hey, take naked pictures of your sisters. Then,
Pass that around.
Yeah. You can see how that goes. Mm-hmm. So, he did go to college, but he dropped out after a single semester. And then after that, he went to live in a hippie commune. Mm. And when he was at the hippie commune, he got married, but then, his wife at the time, she took off because Leonard Lake, like I said, had a fascination with pornography, and he started making amateur porn films, mm-hmm. mostly, you know, S&M type stuff.
Okay.
So, he got into this hippie thing, and then he kind of got obsessed with the idea that the Earth was going to be destroyed in a nuclear holocaust.
Yeah.
Which is kind of, I mean, I had thought that kind of thing didn't really come about till the 80s, like with all that kind of stuff. But I guess because of the Cuban Missile Crisis and all that, I could see
how... Yeah, they had people that thought the apocalypse was coming. Sure.
So yeah, he kind of got really into that. And so when he was at this hippie commune, he lived in a hippie commune for 8 years. It was in Northern California. And that's where he met his second wife. Her name was Clara Lynn, but he called her Cricket. And... she was actually in some of his porn films. So she was kind of into it at the beginning. She was into the porn aspect.
Okay.
It didn't have anything to do with the killing, but she was into the porn aspect. So she was in a bunch of movies he made. Now after he left the commune with his wife, like I said, he was obsessed with nuclear annihilation. So.
Well, he was wanting that to happen, actually.
Yeah, it did kind of sound like that. And so, his wife at the time, Cricket, she had, like a ranch, you know, this huge, like 5,600 acre hippie settlement. Right. And, I think
it's up in California.
Yeah. Up in California somewhere. And so he went there and he went full on survivalist.
Yeah. Building bunkers mode, and underground
like building
stuff.
Bunkers and like, you know, stockpiling weapons and that kind of thing. And then, there came a time when, now this is not confirmed, but most sources say that it is thought that he met Charles Eng through a classified ad that he posted in a survivalist magazine. I'm not, like I said, that's unconfirmed.
That
so I don't know what the classified ad said. Right. Like if it was just, hey, I'm looking for a survivalist buddy or whatever. I don't know. But, so that's apparently how the two of them met. That, you know, if that's not how they met, they don't know how they met. But, so Charles Eng was the other guy. Now, he was a younger dude.
He's a real winner.
Yeah. He was actually born in Hong Kong in 1960. And his family were actually very wealthy, but they were very strict and abusive. And,
yeah, this is kind of a shadowy part of the story, too, about what his parents were like. Because I don't think they could get a whole lot out of him.
Probably not, but that's how the story goes. So apparently he came from a very strict, abusive household. And he was also a kleptomaniac. And that will come in handy.
Well, he was also a Marine, too.
Yeah, he joined the Marines later. But yeah, he was a kleptomaniac, and that will actually be important later. But, so even as a teenager, he was stealing things. He got kicked out of a bunch of schools. They sent him to a boarding school in England where his uncle lived. And he started stealing shit there, too, from the other students. So they kicked him out of there. Now, he came to the U.S. in 1978 on a student visa. And he was going to study biology in Belmont, California. But he also dropped out after only one semester. So watch out for those one semester college dropouts, I guess, is the lesson there. And it was about this time that him and Leonard Lake hooked up. But, or that's when they first met. Now, after, not too long after the two of them met, Charles Eng was in a hit and run ass, like he hit somebody and took off, and he got caught. And to avoid prosecution, he joined the Marines. Now, he was not a citizen.
Okay, yeah.
So he had fake papers, and the Marines actually did not know that he wasn't a citizen. He said that he had a recruiting agent who helped him with all these fake documents and whatever. So he was in the Marines for less than a year. And then, because of his sticky fingers, he stole a bunch of automatic weapons from the base where he was in Hawaii.
Yeah, and it was a couple cases of, I think it was M16s.
And so they were going to court-martial him, but he deserted. So he went back to California, and as soon as he got back to California, he looked up Leonard Lake again. Now, these two...
So he hooked back up with him?
Yeah, after that happened, after he got out of the Marines, And then that wasn't quite when the whole serial killer thing started, because in 1982... Their little compound in Northern California got raided, and there was a bunch of illegal weapons. There were explosives in there and stuff like that.
Damn. I didn't know about that part.
Yeah.
All right.
So I guess Leonard Lake at that point got released on a $6,000 bond, and he took off using a bunch of different names and stuff like that. Charles Eng, got returned to the Marines, their custody. And he pleaded guilty to the theft and desertion charges. And he actually spent 18 months in the military stockade at Leavenworth.
As a slap on the wrist.
Yeah. And then after that, he got paroled, and then he was dishonorably discharged. Right. Okay. So after he got out of Leavenworth, then him and Lake got back together again. Because these two were just apparently...
Yeah.
It was a bromance.
The bromance.
Made in hell. Is what it was. So at this point, when Charles Eng contacted Lake again, Leonard Lake had a cabin in Calaveras County. Now, I think I said before that the initial compound was owned by his ex-wife, but it was actually this cabin that was, so that was a mistake. Sorry about that. But so it was actually this cabin in Calaveras County that his wife owned, his wife Cricket.
Cricket, right.
Yeah. So they were living... those three of them were living in this cabin. And Lake...
Probably making porn films.
Well, yeah, they were.
Yeah.
They were.
Yeah.
And, which would have been fine if they had just left it at that. But no, they just had to take... I know, these guys are so gross. They're so gross. Yeah. But, okay, so Leonard Lake says, he has an idea. I'm going to build a dungeon next to the cabin, which, you know... Never a good idea. Always a red flag, I would think. And they're not... Now, the authorities are not sure, but they think at the point that the dungeon started to get built, they think that Leonard Lake might have already murdered two people.
Okay.
One of whom was his brother, Donald.
Okay.
The second of whom was a man named Charles Gunner, who was a big fat guy. He was a friend of his and had been the best man at him and Cricket's wedding.
This. Yeah.
His thing at first was that he liked to kill people and steal their identities.
Wow.
So, like, he was using their ID and stuff like that. And they would take their
really
money.
He started off as a sexual predator. So
not as
he
such.
He started off as more like a guy that would just kill you and take your stuff, steal your identity. That's how he started.
Right.
Yeah. And this is Lake.
This is Lake. Now, it seemed like... Now, obviously, there's no way of knowing this.
Right.
But, you know, obviously, these are both criminal fuckers.
Right.
Now, if they had not met each other, would it have escalated
the
way it did?
I've studied this aspect of this case, and I think what was going on is that there was, like you said, there was this bromance, And this bromance of these like minds, two of these just wackos, they had this synergy on each other where one was constantly pushing the other one to different heights of criminality.
Right.
And they were up there living in that cabin, making dungeons and bunkers, and they were ex-military guys, and they were getting together weapons and making weapons also, because they also had a MAC-10s, they had silencers. And they thought that they were these basically mountain men, like something from the 1800s, where that was their land, they owned it, they were the law of the land in their little compound. So they just did whatever they wanted. And that alone, because of the isolation and the power they had just over their little immediate vicinity, made them think that they could do whatever they wanted to do and that they could get away with it indefinitely.
Yeah.
Which it kind of was like that for a couple of years.
Yeah, because honestly, they didn't get caught for the murders.
No.
Probably
ought to talk about that later, how they got caught.
Yeah.
But, yeah, this is what happens next.
So, like I said, they think he may have already done two murders, including his brother. So, right. Obviously, he had no...
the whole serial killing thing started.
And it should be noted, too, that even though a lot of serial killers, I mean, they tend to kill strangers, generally.
And it's also usually a sexual motive.
Yeah, which these two had, but later.
Not at that point.
These two kind of killed people that they knew, even if only tangentially.
Right.
Basically, they would kill neighbors, stuff like that. So the year after these two hooked up, and like I said, Charles Eng was living in this cabin with Lake, and his wife was still there at this point, although she took off later.
Now, do you think she knew about the murder of his brother and all that other stuff?
I'm not really sure.
I mean, bet you she did.
Yeah, she may have.
Yeah.
But,
She was one of the clan, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
So she was just like, that's on you guys.
Right. They didn't indict her, so maybe they didn't have enough evidence to say. But, you know, if those two murders did take place while she was still there, then, maybe she
I'm sure she knew.
She did know something about it, maybe. Because
Lake was the kind of guy to brag about it, actually.
Yeah. And like I said, he was going around using other people's IDs and taking their money and shit like that. So the next year was Lake and Eng decided to kind of indulge this grand fantasy that they had come up with. You know, no longer content with just making some harmless S&M porn, they decided that they were going to go whole hog and go with the torture and murder and everything else. Mm-hmm. Because Leonard Lake, and maybe Eng to a smaller extent, but Lake actually has a kind of manifesto, I guess, that he videotaped himself talking about.
Yeah, we can show you some clips
of
that.
Yeah, and I can show you, or let you listen to some clips
of
that.
Some of this had to do with him wanting to repopulate the Earth with his own kindred after the apocalypse. And he was going to need all these women to be his broodmares.
Yeah.
And he was getting this ideas from this book that he read.
Yeah. Oh, and I wanted to mention that. I was going to say that that Leonard Lake, his whole thing, his whole quote-unquote philosophy, which is what he called the video that he made, was that he wanted women to basically just be sex slaves. He said, I want to be able to just fuck them and have them do what I want and then just stick them back in a box somewhere.
Yeah.
And I'm like, dude, they have inflatable dolls now. Did you not know that? Or, you know, well, I guess inflatable dolls won't do your dishes, but you
It's funny when you hear the guy talk, and there are some videos we probably won't show him of him and interacting with his victims.
Yeah, because that is too creepy. That's gross.
But
I'm not
one of the weird things that you get from watching this guy is that he looks like a fantasy role player.
Yeah.
And a lot of times the victims, when he's interacting with the victims, it doesn't even look like a real situation. It's kind of like the victim is so much in shock that they can't believe that this is happening. The guy's kind of robotic and lizard-like, and whenever Ning is talking, Ning, if that's what you want to call it.
Eng or whatever.
Yeah, whenever Ing's talking, he also seems kind of like a real cheesy fantasy role player, like he's playing at being a ninja or something like that. It doesn't look real on video, but it is. It is very real.
Well, like I said, there is, I mean, you know, if you are into that kind of thing, you can see the whole video,
They have them up on YouTube.
They're on YouTube and other places. Actually, now I can just show, I'm just going to show a little bit of just him talking, because there, this video or this audio, it does go on to encompass.
Yeah. And if I remember correctly, he's making these videos in preparation for this new project, and it's to capture all these women.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause that was his thing. Right. So, I'm going to play a little bit of his, philosophy. Now, so, you know, like I said, if you want to look the rest of it up, you can, but I don't really want to show that because it's gross as shit. So here it is.
Good evening. It's a Sunday in October. 22nd, 23rd, something like that. Very close to my 38th birthday. And I'm starting this tape without script or without any real organization of what I want to say. But I do feel a need to explain. What I want is an off-the-shelf sex partner. I want to be able to use a woman whenever and however I want. And when I'm tired, or bored, or not interested, I simply want to put her away. Lock her up in a little room. Get her out of my sight, out of my life. Slave. There's no way around it. Primarily a sexual slave, but nonetheless a physical slave as well. And I believe that I can, if I can construct a holding cell, a place where I can put such a woman, a facility that is so stark, so empty, so cold, so quiet, so totally removed from the world, that I can quickly condition a young woman to cooperate with me fully. If you go along with this, cooperate with this, we'll be as nice as we can to you within the limits of keeping you prisoner. If you don't go along with this, we'll probably take you into the bed, tie you down, rape you, shoot you, and bury you. So, my lady, time's up. Make your choice.
Sir, I want you to be available.
Tell me what to hear. While you're here, we'll keep you busy. You'll wash for us, you'll clean for us, cook for us, you'll cook for us. That's your choice in a nutshell. It's not much of a choice. Unless you've got a death wish.
Yeah, I don't check.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
real winner.
Yeah. So these
you see
assholes.
What I'm talking? You see what I'm talking about? Where he comes off kind of like a role player.
Yeah, he's like real. You know,
and
no
a bad
offense,
role player.
No
like
offense
that.
To role players.
Yeah, no,
they it's
got
just,
cool role players. It's just this guy's a serial killer. This is some role he's playing.
And you can tell it's kind of like, and I guess this is pretty common in a lot of serial killers, that these are dudes that are powerless in a lot of ways. Maybe.
Or trying to compensate for something.
Yeah. I mean, because why would they do it otherwise? I mean, obviously well-adjusted, normal people.
And also you can kind of see that there's something missing in their personality. They're kind of lizard-like, almost like a robot.
Robotic. I mean, obviously they have no empathy
right. For
other people. They just see other people as objects that they can take things from.
Maybe it's because they're objects.
Yeah, and maybe, well, deep down, maybe that's what they think.
Right,
maybe they just think, well, they're nothing. And
they're
so,
like a machine. Yeah.
Yeah, so no one else is anything either. So, over the course of the year, these two dipshits... like I said, I don't like to glorify serial killers.
What's the first ones that they nab?
Well, there's kind of... there's so many. And actually, they didn't really... Like I said, they didn't really know how many they killed. They still don't.
Yeah, these guys weren't ones that really talked. Once they were caught, we'll get to that part of the story later.
But
this is something that a case that mostly had to be put together based on
later on
by video evidence and physical evidence left behind.
Because evidently, at the time that these people disappeared and were murdered, they were not suspected.
Right.
It was only afterward, when they were caught for something else, that people started to get suspicious and went to the cabin to check it out. But some of the people they killed. Now, another thing too that these two assholes did was they would kill a whole family.
Yeah, that was a weird part.
They would take, well, they only did that because they just wanted the woman.
Right.
They would kill the man and a baby.
Yeah.
Immediately. They would just shoot him, like execute him. Mm-hmm. And then they would take the woman and put her in this like weird secret room that they had.
Yeah.
And like make her do all this shit. They, you know, rape her and torture her and stuff like that. And eventually
videotape it.
And videotape all of it.
And what family was that?
Well, the one family, it was actually their neighbors.
Okay.
Lonnie Bond was their neighbor, and he had a girlfriend named Brenda O'Connor, and they had a baby son named Lonnie Jr. Now, Lonnie Bond and the baby, like I said, they were shot immediately. Brenda O'Connor was kept alive, you know, in their little hole, and they videotaped her and did all kinds of horrible things.
Yeah.
They did the same thing with another family.
And I think it was that family was the one that Ning was drawing pictures of it when he was in his prison cell. But maybe that's getting ahead of the story.
But, I'll say that later. But because that asshole. Oh my god. Oh my god. Like later on. Yeah. So I just wanted to kick this guy in the nuts. He's still alive, I think. Yeah. By the way. So you know he's in prison, thankfully. But you know
what's the next one?
He is still alive. But the next family was Harvey and Deborah Dubbs. And they also had a baby son named Sean. Same thing. Harvey and Sean were killed immediately, and Deborah Dubbs was kept alive. And, you know, mutilation, all kind of stuff.
Yeah, now they think that they were separated first and then killed, so the woman didn't know that the baby and the husband had were.
Yeah, there's no indication that. Because, like I said, this was pieced together after the fact.
I believe, if I remember, this is all off the top of my head about this case from what I remember, they had a written instructions for the so-called slave that they had captured, that she had to go along with all this and she had to keep herself looking good through the whole thing in order to be reunited with her family, which is evidence that she didn't know that the family was already dead.
Right. Yeah. Oh yeah. Right. And I think there's photos of that.
Yeah.
If I can find them on, I'm pretty sure I saw photos. If I can put I'll put them in the YouTube video with a little typed thing that's called the rules or whatever.
Right.
I'm
like,
ooh, very Negan-like.
Yeah.
We just watched Walking Dead last night. So that's why we're thinking of that. Negan's rules. I'm going to hit you with a bat. But, but like I said, they were into capturing the women and keeping them and torturing them and using them as sex slaves, but they didn't really discriminate. I mean, they would just pretty much kill anybody.
And they would get them by, sometimes putting, ads out.
Yeah. And actually a few of the victims they found, it might have been the Dubs family, if I'm not mistaken. How they found them was the Harvey Dubs had an ad for some audio equipment that he was selling.
Right.
And
probably just planned on stealing it, but then they saw his wife, they just stole everything.
And they just took everything.
Her and him and everything.
So,
you
know, scary you guys. Yeah. Please, you know, don't post stuff on these weirdos. These weirdos come out. Yeah. It's like, you know, it's just like crazy.
They wanted the video equipment because that's what they were going to make their porn movies with.
Right. And then they figured, hey, two for one.
Yeah.
Oh, man. So they also killed, pretty much anybody. Some people came looking for Lonnie Bond and for Brenda O'Connor, and Lake and Aang killed them too.
Wow.
And
must not have been authorities. They were just civilians. Friends?
Yeah, they came looking because they said, hey, didn't they come here? Like, weren't you guys going to buy something off them? Where'd they go? I was like, I don't know. They never showed up. But yeah. And they also killed two gay men. I'm not sure how they got in contact with them. They probably lived nearby or they worked with them or something like that. Now, when the only reason they got caught. Oh, my gosh. We're almost at the halfway point.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's actually take a commercial break. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to take one commercial break and just put all the commercials in there. And then we'll do that. And then we'll come back and kind of talk about the rest of the case because there's a lot left. So we will be back in just a few minutes.
Ladies and gentlemen, Project Entertainment Network presents The Mondo Method. Introducing the mentor, he's the greatest manager of all time, Mondo Guerrero. And parts unknown, up and coming superstar, The Great Buddha!
Okay, so their names are really Armand, Rosamelia, and Chuck Buddha. And old man Armand is going to teach Whippersnapper Chuck how to write a book. And maybe you too, while they're at it. With marketing morsels from Aaron Sweet Albahari. Exclusively on Project Entertainment Network.
If you're into cosplay, corsetry, steampunk, gothic, or rockabilly clothing, shoes, and accessories, then you must visit Subculture Corsets and Clothing, either online at www.subculturecorsets.com or drop by their store at the Avenues Mall in Jacksonville, Florida, located a half mile off I-95. Tell them you heard their ad on Project Entertainment Network and the 13 O'Clock Podcast and receive a 10% discount off your entire purchase. Or when checking out on their website, use the discount code 13 O'Clock and receive a 10% discount on your entire order. And if you're a full-figured girl, don't worry. Subculture carries sizes 4 through 4X, and they have men's clothing as well. That's subculturecorsets.com, and use discount code 13 O'Clock for a 10% discount. Go check out their website now, subculturecorsets.com, or when traveling through Jacksonville, Florida, stop in and check out their store at the Avenues Mall.
Hey everyone, there's a brand new podcast starting on December 1st, the Dead TV Podcast, where we take shows from the horror industry that have been canceled or ended and review them episode by episode, starting with Kindred the Embraced and Constantine, and you'll have to stick around to see what the third show that we're doing immediately after those. Joining me for this amazing new podcast is Mistress Zeneca.
Hello everyone, thanks for having me.
Mistress Zeneca is an event hostess of kinky, geeky, and sexy parties around the Philadelphia area. She has a flair for the dramatic and is passionate about zombies. She also teaches on a wide variety of BDSM topics, including High Protocol. In fact, you can say she wrote the book on it, which you can find on her website, www.elegantlykinky.com.
Thanks so much. I'm happy to be here. Chris is a longtime horror fan and turned that love of horror into an almost decade-long radio show called Radio of Horror. He wrote a children's Halloween book in 2012 called Give Me Something Good to Eat and has a comic book forthcoming where he gender swaps the entire cast of Dracula. Looking forward to that. On the side, he also makes short horror films in Massachusetts, so how could I say no?
And you can get all the updates about our podcast on our Facebook page, The Dead TV Podcast, and eventually a forthcoming Twitter page as well. So stay tuned for the first episode coming December 1st.
I'm Captain Battersley, and I'm one of the characters in the Curtain Jerks, Project Entertainment Network's pro wrestling podcast. Every Friday, Tokyo Talk, Lord Steve Messer, and the Viking, Superkick Pro Wrestling in the Hot Spot. Featuring interviews with the up-and-coming indie superstars that are stable and shoots while it works. You can only hear them on the Project Entertainment Network. Thank you very much. Remember the Alamo!
There are terrors, real and imaginary, and I write about them all. Paranormal nonfiction, horror fiction, the Rochdale House Poltergeist, the Mammoth Mountain Poltergeist, the Associated Hopeful Monsters, Red Menace, the Five Poisons, Bellwether. Go to www.jennyashford.com or search Amazon for the Jenny Ashford author page.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now here's these assholes again. Okay.
And that wasn't all the victims. There was one girl that they took from a store that she worked at too, though. Remember that one?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. They like knew I said, her and they just walked into the store and told her that her husband had been in an accident and they had to
Well, come with actually that was what ended up happening, this guy, I think it's Michael Carroll, I wanna say was his name. Mm-hmm. He was actually a drug dealer.
Okay.
Now they had killed him previously.
All right.
But he had a girlfriend. Mm-hmm. And she worked at a store or something like that. Now, they went to the store and said, your boyfriend got arrested or he's in trouble or something like that. Okay. You have to come. And then they ended up doing the same thing to her.
Yeah, she made her a slave.
Yeah, pretty much. And, I mean, they did eventually kill them, but they videotaped them. So, like I said, since they killed all the relatives and stuff that came looking for these people that were missing, no one really suspected these two of, you know, murdering anyone, really. How they got caught was due to Charles Eng's kleptomania, right? Charles Eng was in a hardware store in June of 1985, and he was attempting to steal a bench vise by sticking it under his jacket.
Yeah, like you do, you know.
Which, how big is... Bench vices are big, right?
Pretty big.
How can you fit it under your... He was just a little skinny dude.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, I guess that's why he got
caught.
Work.
He didn't work.
Well, because the store clerk, like, called the cops, because it was like, hey, there's this little skinny Asian man in here, and I'm pretty sure he has something under his jacket that he's trying to get out of here. Now, what ended up happening was, you know, so they called the cops, so he took off. Now, apparently, I don't know if Leonard Lake was close by or if Charles Eng had told him he was going there or if he contacted him somehow, but Leonard Lake came to the hardware store and paid for the vice.
Okay.
Now, when he got there, the cops were already there.
Yeah.
Now, he said, oh, well, I just went inside and paid for it.
Right.
That was my friend.
Tried to bail him out.
Right. You know, it's fine. I paid for it. No need for the cops. Yada, yada. Yeah. But then the cops asked Leonard for his identification. Mm-hmm. So Leonard hands over his driver's license, but it was in the name of Robin Stapley.
Dude that was missing, right?
Yeah. And this man was from San Diego and he was missing. And Robin Stapley was only 26 years old.
Right.
So obviously the cops were like, I mean, Leonard Lake was much older than that. He was like in his late 30s, 38, 39. So the cops were like, I don't think that's you. And also, like I said, Robin Shipley had been reported missing. And, you know, the photos didn't even look alike. So what the fuck, Leonard? Right. Jesus. But,
well.
So, okay. So then the cops going, since this isn't you, they searched his car. Mm-hmm. And in the trunk, they found a gun with a suppressor.
Yeah, it was a MAC-10.
Which is illegal.
Right.
So
it's not illegal if you have the license, but he didn't have
the license.
And it was an illegal conversion and a homemade suppressor.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, exactly.
So they knew that was...
So they're like, yeah, no.
They knew that was illegal.
Yeah, no.
That's a federal offense. 10 years.
Yeah. So they took his fingerprints. They arrested him. They took his fingerprints. The fingerprints identified him as Leonard Lake because obviously he had a few convictions before. While he was at the police station, he asked for a glass of water.
Yeah.
They gave him a glass of water. He reached under his lapel, popped something in his mouth, drank the water. Couple minutes later, his eyes rolled back in his head. He started foaming at the mouth, whatever.
Cyanide pill.
Yeah. They took him to the hospital where he died four days later. But
before he did that, he said, the one you're looking for is Charles Ng.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so before he died...
Yeah.
He admitted who he really was.
Yeah.
He gave them Charles Ng's name.
Yeah.
And did he tell them where the cabin was, or did he?
They knew based upon, I think, vehicle registrations and where they knew where he lived.
Yeah. Because I think, like I said, the property, I think, was owned by his ex. Well, she had, Cricket had taken off by this time, but the cabin was owned by his
ex-wife. Yeah. That was an interesting angle. Cricket had to have known that all this capturing women and killing them in the family, she had to have known that was going on.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Like I said, it's not real clear whether she left before that started happening or after.
Well, during the investigation, she went back to that cabin and stole a bunch of videotapes that they had made, which was a bunch of evidence, which kind of maybe implicates her in some of these crimes.
Well, what she said when... Because she went to the cabin before the cops got there, and then she told them, oh, I went out there before. And they said, if you took any evidence, you're in trouble. And she said, well, all I took was some videotapes that were just some porn tapes of me because I didn't want to be embarrassed.
That was just only her words.
Right. But that's what she said.
Yeah. Who knows what it was really happening?
That's what she said. And so the fucker swallowed cyanide pills, but he confessed everything. And it also turned out that the license plate on his car, the plate was registered to Leonard Lake. But the car was registered to a guy named Paul Cosner, and he had been missing since November of 1984.
Mm-hmm.
So since they had his plate, they looked up his auto registration, and that's how they found the property.
Yeah.
And on the property, like at this remote cabin, they found Robin Stapley's truck, and they also found Lonnie Bond's car.
Yeah.
Two of the people that were missing. And then they looked around the property, as you would, and they found the dungeon behind the cabin. When they were looking around the cabin, they also saw a foot poking out of the ground.
Damn.
Which, you know,
like
I said, red flag. So they started digging, obviously, ended up finding about 40 pounds worth of burned bone fragments.
Yeah, and smashed up bone fragments.
Yeah. Now, the bone fragments they found corresponded to about 11 bodies minimum, but probably more. While they were searching the property, they also found a map that Leonard had drawn. And the map led them to, there were these 2 5-gallon buckets that had been buried on the property. One of them had envelopes inside it that had the names and of their victims and their victims' driver's licenses and all this other stuff. Now, the amount of stuff, the amount of IDs and stuff there were in this one bucket suggested that maybe there were as many as 25 victims. Like I said, a lot of the bodies were smashed up and burned. They were cut up and everything. So they're not entirely sure how many people were buried there. But according to the IDs that they had, it could have been as many as 25. Now, the other bucket contained some journals that Leonard had written for two entire years, 83 and 84. And it also had videotapes on which two victims were being tortured. And on one of these tapes, and this will be important later, on one of these tapes, Charles Eng is seen on the videotape and he is talking to Brenda O'Connor.
Yeah.
And he's telling her, you know, you can cry like the rest of them, but it won't do any good. Mm-hmm. You know, we're cold hearted or something like that. And yeah. He's kind of laughing about it.
Yeah.
And the other tape showed Deborah Dubs being tortured. Now,
well, she was assaulted so severely that she could have survived, but it's been unclear what was really on the tape.
That she couldn't have survived.
She couldn't have survived. So I don't know if they were beating her to death or what.
Yeah. And like I said, I'm not going to watch that.
Yeah.
I'm sure the tape is on the internet somewhere because the internet is a dark and terrible place sometimes.
I don't know. I don't think so. That was VHS and it was probably pretty well contained by the cops. I think the stuff that's out there was things that were released to the public. Okay. The other stuff I think was destroyed.
Because man, I don't want to see that other stuff. I don't want to see that. That's awful. But because I got to say, like I said, I'm fascinated with serial killers, but honestly, I think I find them fascinating more, not only because they're evil motherfuckers, but I also because I feel like a lot of empathy with the victims and what the hell that must be like.
I know, especially
when you get to that point where you're like, well, it's a serial killer. I'm like, oh my God, what even goes through your head? I can't imagine. So, and that shit keeps me up at night. But so in the meantime, so Leonard Lake got off easy. Mm-hmm. He poisoned himself.
Yeah.
But obviously, you know, he had given them Charles Eng's name. So they started looking for him. Now he had taken off for Canada. Apparently, he got a flight, like, before anyone was really looking for him, he got a flight to Chicago, and then he got into Canada. But
he did that because he knew there was no death penalty in Canada.
Yeah, that's what happened. Yeah, but...
And they wouldn't extradite from Canada into the United States if you were facing a death count penalty.
Well, yeah, that's another... Yeah. We'll get into that in a little bit. But he was actually arrested in Canada because he was trying to steal shit again.
Yeah, well, that's what you do.
Dumbass. Like,
what an idiot.
And it's sad because, well, it's not sad, but it's like, you know, if he hadn't just like had to take everything he saw.
Well, he had so many personality flaws that he was bound for failure anyway.
Yeah, true. Yeah, what ended up happening, he was shoplifting, and when the cops tried to arrest him, he resisted arrest and shot one of the cops in the hand. So they're like, okay, well, you're under arrest, buddy. But at the time, they arrested him in Canada, and they didn't know he was that Charles Eng. But he was charged with shoplifting, felonious assault, you know, possession of a concealed firearm, yada, yada. Now, he was sentenced to 4.5 years in prison. While he was in prison, like, he did his time, but then, like, they kept him in prison because then, you know, by that time, the U.S. had said, hey, we want that motherfucker.
Yeah, I didn't know who he was. They didn't know who they had for a while.
Yeah.
Which, that's dumb. Had he not resisted, he probably would have been right back out of jail on that shoplifting charge.
Yeah, I mean, just shoplifting.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, and he had an illegal firearm, too. But
if he didn't have that, he would have walked on the shoplifting and been back out there doing it. But yeah, he's so dumb, you know.
These aren't the brightest bulbs, we're talking about. You know what I mean? It's not like fictional serial killers like Hannibal Lecter and he's super smart and everything. Most of them are just dumb.
A lot of these
fuckers.
Guys are dumb.
And I think the only reason a lot of them don't get caught is just because of dumb luck.
Yeah.
Or because people aren't looking for their victims.
Everybody's talking about how intelligent serial killers are, but you have to understand that criminals are graded on a curve.
All right. Yeah, that's true. And like I said, I think
they're just slightly above average.
I think a lot of them are stupid. I think the only reason that they don't get caught, like I said, is just dumb luck, or because they kill prostitutes or something, where people aren't looking too hard,
and they're not connected to those people; they're strangers.
Yeah, and that makes it harder as well. Yeah. But so this dickhole, He's in prison in Canada.
Dickhole.
Yeah.
Gee, okay.
I just, these guys, I don't know. So, like,
what kind of term is that?
So Charles Ng, he's in prison in Canada. U.S. says we want to extradite him. Now, some sources say that the Canadian government said, no, we can't extradite him because, you know, they didn't have the death penalty there. And we said, we don't, you know, we have a thing where we don't extradite because we are afraid to get the death penalty. Now, some other sources say that Charles Ng was the one that was fighting it the hardest. Like, yeah. I don't want to get sent back.
Right.
But eventually, so it was like this huge legal battle where they didn't want to extradite.
He went on this long campaign of delaying his trial.
Yeah.
By all these legal moves that he made.
Right.
He knew how to manipulate Canada's legal system.
Yeah. Yeah, because the whole time he was in prison, he was studying American law.
Right.
Like the whole time, like the whole 4.5 years he was in there before they figured out who he was. But, so he kind of knew his shit, evidently. Mm-hmm. But so it was a big, huge legal battle. But eventually the Canadian government said, no, get him out of here. Yeah, and they did send him back. He actually took it all the way to the Canadian Supreme Court, but in 1991 they ruled against him and he was sent to, he was extradited to California in late 1991. And then there came another long protracted legal battle that went on I think it ended up costing the state of California like $20 million or something like that.
Yeah, they showed the paperwork and it's like rooms and rooms of big boxes of files, you know.
Because...
wasted all this paperwork on this numbskull.
Because what Charles Ng kept doing was, it seemed like every tiny little detail, he would like, I'm suing about that. I'm suing because the food isn't good enough. I'm suing because... you made me tired during a drive here or something like that. It was all stupid shit like that.
Yeah, he was just trying to bog down the legal system and slow everything.
Yeah, which like I said, that he had spent years like studying them and he knew like all these little loopholes, I guess, and shit like that. So he spent years and years and years fighting it.
He used the Scientology method.
Yeah, that's exactly. What Scientology does. They're wearing everyone down. He went through like 10 attorneys and then he was going to sue about that because he's like, oh, we thought they were incompetent.
Yeah.
And then he wanted to represent himself.
Then he would request change filed, of venue.
Well, that was actually successful. He did get a change of venue to Orange County because he was originally extradited to Calaveras County.
Right.
In Calaveras, he was indicted on 12 counts of first-degree murder. But they did change it to Orange County because I guess that was legit because I guess they did some kind of thing in Calaveras County. I was like, fry the fucker. So I guess they thought he couldn't get a fair trial there, whatever. So, you know, that happened.
So what was the end result? What happened to him?
Well, so he goes through all this stuff. He filed charges against the judges and all this other shit. Like his eyeglasses weren't strong enough, whatever. his right to practice origami in jail.
Right.
Like,
well, he's still alive, right?
He's still alive, yeah. Well, he's on death row.
He's sentenced to death. Right? Yeah. When did that sentence come down?
It was, so like I said, he went through 10 attorneys. Now, after his extradition, he was imprisoned in California for 6 years before the trial even started because of all this bullshit.
Right.
And they did let him represent himself. But then that delayed the trial for yet another year because that was another whole can of worms.
He's just buying time.
Yeah. His defense.
And you see videos of him. He's getting paler and paler and fatter in all this prison time.
So he did get really fat.
He's living off of cookies.
Prison cookies.
Prison cookies.
Are they like McDonaldland cookies except with little. They're all the Hamburglar.
They're like those little animal crackers.
Jesus Christ. Okay, so...
they're made out of sawdust.
Ew, sawdust. Okay,
let's get to it.
So, Charles Ng's defense was... I mean, you know, what possible defense could he have? I'm sure it must be good. But all he said was, oh, I was just an observer, and I was forced into it by Leonard. He was so mean to me.
Yeah.
And he made me do all these horrible things and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, okay, put it on with that.
Even though... there were all these videos with his dumbass right there, like talking to the victims.
Yeah, you can tell he's into it.
Like that. Yeah.
You can tell he's into it.
Yeah. And like I said, he had done all this other bad shit too. It wasn't like he was some fucking angel.
So is he still on death row? Is he executed yet? I think he's still on death row, right?
Now, he was convicted in 1999. He was convicted of 11 of the 12, which included 6 men, 3 women, and 2 male infants. The 12th charge, they didn't have enough evidence, but, you know, 11th, that's enough.
Yeah.
And they sentenced him to death. And at the time that he was convicted, his trial, I think the OJ might have been more, but at the time, his trial was the most expensive in state history.
Yeah. $20 million.
Yeah.
Thanks, awesome. Charlie.
Your tax dollars at work. Well, not my tax dollars. That's California.
California.
But, well, although you have to admire California because at some point people were like, you know, we really want to spend money on this motherfucker. And the state of California was like, yeah, spend all the money you need. Just get his ass in jail. Get his ass on death row. And they did. It took a long time and it took a lot of money, but they eventually did. And he is actually still alive.
Damn.
He's in San Quentin.
Man.
So if anybody wants to...
He should be dead by now. At 99, he was convicted in 99. Hurry up. Where's the needle? Hand me that needle.
Well, you know how long it takes.
What's really weird, what's really bad about this case is like all the other little stuff that came out around it. Like they released drawings that he made in prison. And one of them where he shows them killing a victim by cooking her over a fire, an open fire.
Yeah.
And another one, evidently, what they would do is... They promised these captured women they promised that they would reunite them with their families. And in some of the drawings, it shows that what the reuniting them with their families was all about. They would just bring them a bag of bones, burnt up bones. So this is your family.
That's fucked up.
And then videotape her crying and shit. These dudes were inhumans.
That is fucked up.
Inhuman animals, yeah. And then there's another little snippet of video that came out from that torture tape. At the very end of it, it looks like they had recorded over something that was on there before,
mm-hmm.
but they missed like a half a second at the very, very end.
Yeah.
And there's a few frames of a really creepy photo of a body in rigor mortis wrapped up. I think it might have been in a sleeping bag and then tied up. And it's in a wheelbarrow, if I remember. And it's just like stiff with the feet going straight. It's really, really creepy. And they don't know who that was.
Oh,
one of the ones in them. These dudes were, oh man.
Cause like I said, if they killed like 25 victims, I'm not sure they even identified all
no,
of them.
No, they don't know who
because,
was.
You know, like I said, Ng was only convicted of 11 and he was only, you know, he was only charged with 12.
It's
so those were just the ones they figured out,
yeah.
Like, you know.
The other ones were the ones that are on the missing people's cases that were never solved.
Yeah, they just never found them. Because most of the bodies, like I said, they were crushed up or burned.
And they were burned. They couldn't get DNA out of them.
Yeah, it was the 80s.
Yeah.
And, I should say, because you mentioned the drawings, that was another thing that didn't help Charles Ng's defense, was that while he was in jail, he drew all these little cartoon drawings of, like, their crimes.
Yeah.
And... they used those as evidence.
Yeah, he said he was just messing around, but they're so relative to the cases that they...
Yeah, they said they, you know, whoever drew these obviously was into it and obviously knew a lot about
it. And they believe that stuff happened. It made sense with the evidence of what they had.
Yeah. So, you know, not, like I said, not the brightest bulb. And I think I mentioned this shortly before, but I kind of wanted to go back into this. Now, remember I said, you know, Leonard Lake kind of got a lot of his philosophy... from this book.
Well, he called it a philosophy.
Yeah.
I'm
calling it philosophy sardonically.
Yeah.
Imagine air quotes.
More like
bunny rabbit ears. As
more like sadistic
to say.
Fantasy. Not so much more like a philosophy.
Right. But his favorite book was called The Collector. And it was written in 1963 by an English writer. It was his first novel, John Fowles. And they made a movie out of it in 1965, which actually I haven't seen it, but I should see that. And what happened in this book is that it's about this loser guy who's like a clerk and he's a butterfly collector. And he decides he falls in love with this girl from afar, like when he's in school. And, you know, she doesn't really know who he is, doesn't give him the time of day, whatever. I guess she's like out of his league or what have you. And so he decides that just like his beautiful butterfly collection, he is going to collect this woman that he loves so much. So he kidnaps her and keeps her, you know, in a little bunker or what have you, in the cellar, rather. Her name is Miranda. And that is actually relevant because in this little secret room that the cops found in Lake and Aang's little torture dungeon... He had written, Leonard Lake had written on the wall, like Operation Miranda or something like that with Miranda in it.
Yeah, and I think on the torture tapes it said M-Girls or something was the name.
Yeah, and that's what they were referring to as Miranda, who was a character from this book, The Collector. And so she, there's kind of this whole thing, but eventually the girl ends up dying. But so that's kind of where a lot of his ideas came from. Now, the other fascinating thing about this book was that it apparently kind of had associations with a couple other serial killers, too. So I know, like, I'm a fiction writer, and I would hate to think that one of my books, like, inspired three serial killers. I'm like, oh, my God, what the fuck did I write?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Like, you'd almost kind of want to, like, take it back.
Right.
But, you know, you can't control what people are going to do with your shit, but, you know.
Something about the way that that book was written.
It really seems to resonate with the serial killer mind for some reason.
Or at least that type of serial killer.
Yeah, but this same book was cited as an inspiration by a guy named Robert Berdella, who killed people in 1988. And also Christopher Wilder, who is known as the Beauty Queen Killer.
Yeah.
And actually, he was a fuck up too. Like, I just saw a really old, because this happened in 84, I think, was his thing. And I just saw...
We'll do one on him eventually.
Yeah, I just saw a thing about him the other day. So I just thought it was interesting, that weird connection, because I was just out of, you know, just randomly, I was randomly watching one of those old FBI file shows or whatever about Christopher Wilder. His shtick was basically he would go into malls and go, hey, I'm a photographer, you're pretty, you should pose for mine. And then he would kidnap him and rape him and kill him. So, like I said, I don't know what it is about this book. Now I have to read this book to see.
No, don't read that book.
What?
Okay, read it.
It'll turn me into a serial killer. It has some kind of weird, I don't know what it is. But yeah, for some reason, this book really seems to resonate with that kind of personality. And that's sad. Sorry, John Fowles. I don't know if you're still alive or not, but yeah. Sorry you wrote that. But anyway, so...
We probably ought to wrap it up.
Probably. Yeah, it's like,
we'll try to include some of the pictures that we can find and some of the video stuff. Yeah, there's stuff out there, just as long as it's not too creepy.
I'm not, like I said, I found...
Or we can put it up on maximum creepy. We can set the creepy level up to 11.
I don't know, man. Like, I don't want to sit through. Like I said, I sat through... This is bad. See, this is what happens when you write horror and when you do podcasts about serial killers. You're up at 7:30 in the morning and you're watching videos of girls being undressed and tortured by weirdos. And it's really
in the video stuff that's out there, they don't actually show the torture.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, but even the one that I watched, like I said, the beginning of it was,
it's pretty creepy.
Was just Leonard Lake talking about, I want sex slaves, blah, blah, blah. And then there was one of the victims. I'm like, no, I'm not watching that part. And I'm not, you can find it if you want.
She just goes, where's my baby? Oh, your baby's sleeping like a stone. That's what Ying said. And you're like, you asshole. About to catch those guys, man. I'm turning Punisher.
Yeah. Well, that's why I kind of wish the Punisher really existed.
Yeah.
Or Dexter.
Yeah.
I would really like it if, I don't condone murdering people, but honestly, people like this, why? You don't need that. We don't need that.
No.
Just take them out.
Nope.
You know what I mean? You know, I'm not you guys personally, just, you know, I just wish someone would. And it kind of pisses me off. And this pisses me off about Christopher Wilder, the model killer, too, was that they got off so easy. Leonard Lake got off so easy. He's just like, hey, I'm going to pop some cyanide tablets.
He was prepared. He had that cyanide tablet woven into a little patch that he made underneath his collar.
And that kills me because...
Yeah. He planned ahead.
Yeah, that didn't even occur to me because he didn't even get arrested for the murders. He got arrested because they found that illegal suppressor.
But he knew the jig was up. He knew that was going to lead it back to the house because of his registration and everything. He knew they were looking for anything. He knew that they would find...
So did this guy have cyanide tablets like sewed into every shirt that he owned?
He probably had little pockets sewed into a lot of them and just took that same capsule and put it into whatever shirt he was wearing of the day. That's how paranoid he was. Like, imagine once you have that. I mean, I don't know how a dude sleeps at night, but anyway.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Well, not crazy from their point of view. He didn't want to be a prisoner.
Crazy like a fox. Yeah, I guess not.
He didn't want to be a prisoner.
Well, he wasn't.
The last thing that these kind of guys want to do is lose power over themselves. So they're not going to let the authorities take their freedom away. They'd rather die.
Yeah, well, he did.
They could go down like a kamikaze.
Too bad there's not a hell.
Okay, let's wrap it up. This is a good one.
All right, this was an interesting, if slightly icky, kind of show. So, you know, if you enjoyed your show, like I said, hi to all our new subscribers and all those cool-ass people we met at Spooky Empire. Hi.
Yeah.
And, also, I got to remind everybody, we still have t-shirts. Go to t-shirts. www.zazzle.com/13o'clock. We still have the 5 shirts. I'm gonna get to doing new ones too eventually. It's just, you know, I have a lot of other shit to do too. But, you know, the 5 ones that we have are awesome. So, you know, if you want to get some. And also, if you like the show, subscribe. I'll put a little link up. Go to our Facebook page, 13 o'clock podcast. Go to our Twitter page. 13 o'clock podcast. I almost said 5 o'clock podcast. What the fuck am I talking about? I don't know. Okay. It's not early. That's not an excuse. But yeah, you know, 13 o'clock podcast. We're all over the place, you know. And I think that'll do it for episode 16, right?
All right. So long.
All right. See you guys next week. Bye.
This has been an exclusive presentation of the Project Entertainment Network.